I'm in Joshua chapter 7. While you're turning there, I just was thinking this morning a little bit about how incredible and how amazing that our God truly is. When God began to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt in that Egyptian bondage, they came out and they didn't get too far along in their journey, and they came up against the Red Sea. And of course, Pharaoh and all of his chariots and all of his army were pursuing them hotly. I'm sure to Pharaoh, it looked like the Israelites were trapped. But what did our God do? He parted the Red Sea, and the nation of Israel went across on dry ground. And then when Pharaoh came in after them, of course, God closed the walls of water and he drowned the entire army of Pharaoh. They wandered in the wilderness because of disobedience and unbelief. They wandered for 40 years in a desert wilderness, going round and round, but yet God never left them and God sustained them. He kept their shoes on their feet. Their clothes didn't wear thin, and God fed them with manna, fed them with quails, gave them water to drink. But when it came time for God's people to go into the promised land of Canaan, they're over there on the east side of the River Jordan in the land of Moab. And it came time for them to come and cross the River Jordan and to go into Canaan's land. Here's another instance where we see the Israelites is commanded by God. They took the Ark of the Covenant, and the priest that bore the Ark of the Covenant, when they went into the waters of the River Jordan parted, and the Israelites crossed the Jordan River on dry ground. They went across. And here in Joshua chapter 7, well, I'll actually start reading a little bit in chapter 6, but this is the occasion. Now the Israelites have just crossed the Jordan River. They're right up against in the edge of Canaan's land, and they're right next to the city called Jericho. And it's in chapter 6, they're about to invade the city of Jericho and attack and take over the very first city in the land of Canaan's land that the Lord is going to help them do this. God has given them the promise of the promised land in Canaan, and he said, I would help you defeat all of these nations that are there, all these evil and sinful nations that are currently dwelling there. I will help you one by one to push them out, and the land is going to be yours. God made this promise. And here, as they're about to go in to the city of Jericho, down in verse 17, one of the very last instructions that Joshua gives to the Israelites. You see, Moses has just passed off the scene. He has handed the torch or the baton over to Joshua, and Joshua is now leading the children of Israel. One of the very last pieces of instruction that Joshua gives to the Israelites before they take the city of Jericho is found in verse 17, and he says, the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in this house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And ye, in any wise, keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when you take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse, and trouble it. He says that in verse 19, all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. And so one of the critical pieces of instruction that Joshua gave to the Israelites before they went in was, keep your hands off of the spoil. When you go into this city, we're going to destroy it. God's going to give you the city, but you're going to destroy everything that's in the city, and you're not going to take of any of the spoil. All the silver and the gold and the brass, whatever we find of it, is all dedicated and consecrated to the Lord's house. The priest will take care of that, but you're not to take anything else. So they had very clear instructions. He says, because if you do that, he says, you will cause yourself to be accursed. But he didn't stop there. He also says, you will cause the camp of Israel to be a curse. So your actions will have far-reaching consequences if you do this. So he gave them a good warning. And now it's time for the Israelites to go in. And you can read on down, beginning on verse 20, of how that God had given them instructions there to go there. And 6 days in a row, they're supposed to march around the city of Jericho. They will follow the priest and the Ark of the Covenant. They will march around. They are not to say a word. They will march around the whole city one time. And the priest will have the trumpets with them, and they will blow the trumpets, but the people will never speak a word. 6 days they did that, marched around the whole city. The seventh day they marched around the city 7 times, and then when they shouted, the great walls that were built, a fortification around the city of Jericho, fell down flat, and the people rushed in, and they began to take the city. And you can read about that and how that happened. And so they were successful. And it says in verse 21, I'm still in chapter 6 here, in verse 21, it says when they went in and they took the city, it says that they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass with the edge of the sword. And when I read that and I stop and think about what it means that God instructed his people to go into this city and utterly destroy everything that breathes in the city. Destroy it. Now, when you think about what normal cities are composed of and all the different people and all the different age groups, all I can tell you is that there are some things about our God that I will never understand. And I wouldn't try to tell you what God's thinking and what God is doing and why he does certain things. There's some things about God that are too far above me. But I know for a fact there were many times where God sent his people in to take over a city or to take over a land, and God instructed them to destroy everything there. And in some places we were told it's because God does not want to take the chance of those ungodly people and their idols and their ungodly idol worship. God does not want any influence of them upon his people. And God basically had them annihilated when he gave the land to his people, the children of Israel. I don't know, when you read things like this, if you ever stop and think about that. Some things that God does, it just seems like you can't anticipate some of the things that he does. But I always encourage you to remember Deuteronomy 29:29. It says, the secret things belong unto the Lord, but those things that are revealed belong unto us and to our children, that we may learn how to obey and to follow all the commandments of this word. God has some things that he reserves for himself, doesn't he? They went in and successfully took the city. But when you get to chapter 7, look what you read in verse 1. The children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. When you begin reading in the next verse, you'll find that there was a little small town named Ai. Joshua was ready to continue moving forward and taking possession of the land. And he sent some men to go and to view and to check out the city of Ai. And when they came back to him, they said, it's just a small city. It's not very many people there. We don't need to send everyone. And in fact, he says there are only just a few of them. And you will actually learn, once you get to chapter 8, you'll learn that when they finally did go in and destroy Ai, it was about 12,000 men and women that it said were destroyed. So not that many, about 12,000. So when they came back to Joshua, they said, it's only a few people over there. Let's only send 3,000 men. And so that's what they did. Joshua sent 3,000 men, and they went to go and try to take the city of Ai, but they were soundly defeated. And in fact, you read here, and it says the men of Ai came out and chased them, and they embarrassed and humiliated the Israelites, and they turned tail and ran, and 36 of them died. 36 of the Israelites died that day because God was not helping them in their attack upon Ai. And so Joshua was confused, and as you read down a little bit further, you'll find Joshua has now prostrated himself upon the earth. He is laying down before the Lord, and he's asking the Lord, he says, I don't understand what happened. Why have you brought us out here? Why has this occurred? And basically, the Lord said to him in verse 10, the Lord said to Joshua, he says, get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Israel hath sinned. This is God speaking to Joshua. He says, Israel have sinned, and they have transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. Therefore, the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but they turned their backs because they were accursed. And then God tells Joshua, he says, neither will I be with you anymore, except you destroy the accursed from among you. Now you remember the instructions that Joshua very clearly gave to the Israelites before they went into Jericho. But now we find that there's one man who disobeyed the instructions, and his name was Achan. I think I've mentioned Achan a time or two in passing before, but I don't think I've ever tried to focus in and look at him in a little bit of detail. But I want to try to do that if the Lord would help us this morning. This man, Achan, decided that he would not obey God's commandment, and he took something during the invasion, and he took it for himself. And so we find that God says, you have someone that has transgressed my commandment, and that's why I was not with you when you attacked Ai, and furthermore, I will never be with you again unless you find out who it is and take care of it and deal with it. Isn't it something that God has no room for people that are going to disobey his commandments? It's very displeasing to him. It said in verse 1, the Lord's anger was kindled against the children of Israel because of that one man, Achan. If you continue to read down in chapter 7 here, you'll find where Joshua began to line up the tribes of the nation of Israel, and one by one he began to have the tribes come before him. And then the Lord was letting him know which tribe is involved. And as you read through here, one by one they came through there, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And then it begins to name. He took the family of the Zorites, and he brought the family of the Zorites man by man, and then a man named Zabdi was taken. And of course, eventually he gets down to the man Achan, and the Lord lets Joshua know that it was Achan is the one that trespassed and took of the accursed stuff. So the Lord identifies who it was. And you read here, and it says, Joshua said unto Achan, he says, my son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Lord God of Israel, and make confession unto him. Tell me now what thou hast done. Hide it not from me. And Achan fessed up. I mean, what else is he going to do? He's been called before. His tribe has been brought before Joshua. The Lord has identified the tribe. He's identified the family. He's identified several men in the family. And Lord said, it's this man, Achan. He's the one. I mean, no sense in denying it anymore, is it? Achan fessed up. And it says that he answered Joshua, and he says, this is what I did. He said, "Indeed, I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and thus have I done. When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment, and 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold, and 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them. And I took them, and behold, they are hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it." And lo and behold, Joshua sent people over there and found it to be so. They went in his tent and they found these things that he had stolen. He admitted what he did. He says, "I saw something over there." He says, "I saw a garment that I liked, and I saw some silver, and I saw some gold." He says, "I saw them, I coveted, I wanted to have them, and so I took them, and then I went and hid them in my tent. That's exactly what I did." And the Lord called him out for it. You know, this man, basically what he did is he tried to steal something that belonged to the Lord, didn't he? God said the silver and gold through Joshua, he told him the silver and gold and the brass, he said that's going to be dedicated and consecrated to the Lord's house. He says, "Don't you dare touch that." He says, "Don't touch anything else when we go in. By the way, don't take any of the spoils." He says, "That whole city is accursed. God has cursed that city," and he says, "Don't you take any of it. Especially not the silver and gold." But you see what that man Achan did? He had a desire, and he says that he saw these things, and he began to covet them. Isn't that something? He thought that he was going to steal a little bit of the Lord's gold and silver, and that no one would know about it. He'd hide them in his tent, no one would know. Well, apparently no one else did know except the Lord. But you know, the Lord always knows, doesn't he? Doesn't the Lord always know what we're up to? You can't hide from God. You can go where it's light, you can go where it's dark, you can go where you think no one can see you, but the Lord can always see you. If it's the middle of the nighttime and there's not a light to be found, the Lord is looking at you just like it's in the noonday sun to him. The Lord always sees what his children are doing. You're not going to steal something from God and get away with it. You know, in fact, during this time period, back in the book of Leviticus, God had given instructions to the children of Israel concerning a land Sabbath. I don't know if we've talked about that here or not at Anger Church, but you can go back over there. It might have been Leviticus chapter 25 maybe, but you can look it up. God says every seventh year you are to let the land rest. In other words, don't plant your crops on the seventh year. I'm going to give you enough food from the sixth year to sustain you over until you can plant your crops on the eighth year, and then they begin to come in. God says, "I'll take care of that." It was the same principle as God and the manna. Remember, you gathered manna for 6 days, and he gave you enough. You didn't go out and gather manna on the seventh day because that was a Sabbath day to the Lord. Well, the Lord says every seventh year was a Sabbath unto the land. You're going to let the land lay fallow and it's going to rest. You are not to plant crops on it. But what do you think the children of Israel did? Do you think they paid attention to the Lord? You think they obeyed his commandments concerning the land? If God says we're supposed to be in church on Sunday, do you think that all the businesses are going to be closed and all the activities are going to be shut down so everybody can be in church very easily? And, well, it used to be that way years ago, but it's not anymore, is it? Because people want to do their own things. Well, the Israelites, they decided they wanted to plant on this seventh year. Eventually, they stopped obeying this. And for many, many years, they planted every single year. They did not let the land rest as God told them to. I suppose they thought they were getting away with it. Maybe they did for a long time, because you remember there came a time in the history of the nation of Israel where God up and let them be overrun by a man named Nebuchadnezzar, and he took them all into Babylonian captivity for 70 years. Well, the reason that God's people went to Babylonian captivity is God sent them there as punishment for not letting the land rest every 7 years. And he said, you're going to be over here a year for every Sabbath that you tried to steal from me. In other words, the Israelites tried to steal that Sabbath year from the Lord, and it belonged to the Lord. Well, friends, you cannot steal from the Lord and get away with it. You might get by with it for a little while, but eventually you're going to pay up. God's not going to let it slide. Well, the Israelites paid up. They paid by 70 years of brutal Babylonian captivity over there. God said, I'm going to get my time back. I'll get my Sabbath years back, and he did. All the land in Israel laid rest for 70 years. God got every one of those Sabbaths back. This man, Achan, thought he was going to steal a little bit of the gold and silver that was dedicated to the Lord, and he thought the Lord wouldn't mind and that no one would know about it. Perhaps he thought that maybe even the Lord might not notice this if I would take it and go bury it in my tent in the earth. But I'll tell you, the Lord doesn't miss anything. Our God never misses anything. I'm afraid that there are some of the Lord's little children today that think that they can do whatever they want to sometimes. They have their own ideas about things that they want to do. But you cannot steal from the Lord. You know what the Lord said we ought to be doing on the Sabbath day? He says, us and all of our families, we ought to be assembled in the house of the Lord. He says, we ought to assemble ourselves in a congregation, and this day is for worship. But sometimes I think some of the Lord's little children think that they can take that day and take it from the Lord and go do something else. You might get away with it for a little while, but you know eventually I believe you're going to pay up. I don't think God's going to just let it slide forever. And I don't know about you, but for me, I don't want to find out. I do not want to find out if the Lord was displeased with me for trying to steal a few of his Sabbath days here and there. You just see the principle hat carries on and on and on through God's word. This day belongs to the Lord, doesn't it? I'm glad that this church has always understood that. I believe it's always been very faithful to know that and to try to continue that commandment that we have of the Lord. I'm so thankful for that. But you know what this man's problem was here? This man followed the very same pattern that sin often takes in our lives if we're not careful. This man put something before his eyes and he did not guard and safeguard his eyes and the things that he allowed himself to see and to dwell and think about. Because here's the pattern. What did he do? He saw, and then he coveted, and then he took, and then he tried to hide it. Now, is that not about a common pattern for sin in the lives of many people today? They see something, and you see where it starts? It starts with our eyes. I'll tell you, we need to guard what we place before our eyes today. I'd say now more than ever. We need to be very careful as families and guardians of our younger generation that's growing up, especially our young ones. We need to be very careful about what we allow them to place before their eyes, because so many actions originate with the sight, with our eyesight, things we see first. And I mean, this followed that very same pattern. How about King David? You remember when King David had a great sin in his life concerning Bathsheba? Did it not follow the same pattern? What was David doing when he should have been out in the field with the army? Okay, and he stayed at home. What did he do? He walked out on his rooftop one day and he looked down and he saw this beautiful lady named Bathsheba bathing. He saw. Did he not covet? Did he not take? And then when she's later found with child, did he not try to hide it? Sure he did. Very same pattern. How did it start? It started with the eyesight. The things that we place before our eyes and allow to come before our eyes. You know what David should have done? He should have immediately turned around and went back in his house. David did a train wreck upon his life, and he paid for it all the remaining days of his life. We just find that our eyes are something that we need to take great care with what we place before them and what we allow to come before our eyes and what we see. Things that we read, things that we see, and especially some of the media and the television and the movies and the things like that that we see today. We need to take great care in what we allow our children to be viewing. Not only children, but adults as well. In Psalms 101, David wrote this about his eyes. He said, "I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me, and I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath an high look and a proud heart will I not suffer. And mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me." David says, "I'm going to be very careful what I put before my eyes from now on." I feel quite sure David wrote this psalm after his experience where he transgressed and he had such a great sin against the Lord in the matter of Bathsheba. David wrote this and he says, "I'm going to be very careful. I'm not going to set any wicked thing before mine eyes." And he says, "I'm only going to place my eyes upon the faithful of the land, people that walk uprightly and try to serve the Lord." You know, James says that every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and he's enticed. And he says, "Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." There's a lot of trouble for the Lord's little children today could be avoided and could be eliminated if we'd only be so careful as to what to place before our eyes. And what we allow ourselves to see. So many times. I'll tell you, this man Achan, I'm sure he thought he was going to get away with something here. But you know, it didn't end very well for him. It didn't end well for Achan at all. Because you know what happened? After he came and he confessed to Joshua what he did, he said, "I saw the garment, I saw the silver and the wedge of gold." He said, "I coveted, I took them, and behold, they're hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent." Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan in verse 24. It says, "They took Achan, the son of Zerah, and the silver and the garment and the wedge of gold and his sons and his daughters, and his oxen, his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had." Everything related to Achan, his entire family and all of his possessions. They took every bit of it, and they brought them into the valley of Achor. Achor means trouble. That's what it means, the valley of trouble. They brought him, his family, there, and Joshua said, "Why hast thou troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee this day." And all Israel stoned him with stones and burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones. and they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. So the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger, and wherefore the name of that place was called the Valley of Achor unto this day. It didn't end very well for Achan, but it also didn't end very well for his family. You know, here's the scary thing. Here's the sobering thing about sin. Sin oftentimes doesn't just affect the sinner, but it affects others as well. That's the sobering thing about sin when you think about it. Not only was Achan affected, not only did Achan lose his life, but his entire family lost their life because of his sin. They took everything that man owned, even all of his cattle, all of his possessions, and they stoned them with stones. And then, just to show you how disgraceful it was, they burned them with fire. I'll tell you, that's a disgraceful way to dispose of somebody's family, isn't it? To stone them to death, then pile them up and burn them with fire. You know, when somebody dies in the Bible, like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all the great characters of the Bible, you know what they always did with them? They buried them. That's the traditional Bible method for disposing of people that lived an honorable life. But not this man. It ended terrible for his family. I'll tell you, not only did it affect Achan and it affected his entire family, but it affected the entire nation of Israel. Israel lost 36 soldiers the first time they tried to take on the city of Ai, which was much smaller. It shouldn't have been much trouble at all. And it wouldn't have been if the Lord would have been with them. Can you see how far-reaching the effects of sin travel, though, and how important it is that we do everything we can to keep it out of our lives? Not only will we possibly affect ourselves, we may affect our family members. Can you see that this morning? How important. Yes, an individual can be troubled by sin and greatly affected. Yes, a family can be affected. How about a church? Sure. How about a whole church being affected by one hidden sin? I'll tell you, it might be hidden from a lot of people, but the Lord sees it. How about a community? Could a whole community be impacted? How about a whole nation? I wonder about our nation right now. It just makes me wonder. I wouldn't be surprised if God was not very pleased with our nation because of many of the things that our nation has done, falling away from God and from His Word. Just a great, great thing to bring to our minds from time to time is this man Achan and his situation. You know, we think that oftentimes little small things in life and little mistakes that we make, we think it doesn't affect us that much, and the choices that we make. But I say it does oftentimes. The choices that this man Achan made because he saw something and he didn't properly control his feelings and his lust and his greed for trying to go have something that God had clearly said, you can't have this. He said to leave it alone. It brought him a lot of trouble on him and his family. What a good reminder, though, of just how far-reaching that sin can be. The sins of one man, the hidden sin of one man, brought trouble to a whole nation of God's people. Isn't that sobering when we think about that? Isn't it sobering in causes us to reflect upon our lives and am I doing the very best that I can to live my life in a way that's glorifying and pleasing unto the Lord? It does me. I don't want to take the attitude of Achan and think that I can get by with not following the Lord's commandments. I'm very thankful that God has put these stories in here for us. And it just reminds us, serves as a good reminder. We often talk of the goodness and the graciousness and the love of God and the mercy of God. And I'm glad that we can talk about that and glad we can proclaim how great God is. But I'll tell you, God has some other expectations for his people too, doesn't he? He's given us some guidelines to live by. And I'll tell you, the Lord does not like sin. Sin literally stinks in the nostrils of God. He despises and he detests sin. And he does not want us and our families to have any part in it. I'm glad God has put these stories and these details and references in his word so we can see what the common pattern for sin is, starting with our eyes and not being careful of what we place before our eyes and not letting that pattern run its normal course like it has so many times. Many of the great characters in the Bible have been affected by it. But you know, those things are there for our learning. God's put them there for our learning. I hope that we'll always think about these things, and when we read these stories and read of these occasions, that it'll remind us of how hard that each of us will want to try to please God in the way that we walk in our conversation here and live in this world. May God bless and keep each one of you.